Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. The first Champions Cup block is behind us and the Christmas URC Interpros are on the horizon. The first of them this Friday at the Aviva Stadium. Leinster against Ulster Friday night at 7:45. Commentary of that, by the way, on RTE Radio 1 Extra on Friday evening. On the podcast this week, bringing his festive cheer to the RTE Podcast studio as he does every week, Bernard Jackman. How are you doing, Birch?
Very good, thanks. Yep.
And also with us for the first time, Brett Igoe, rugby coach, rugby analyst, all-round rugby man. Brett, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for the invite, Neil.
I know, always good to get some more people in on the couch, and particularly have a nice full couch as well. Always good to have conversations in person. We have a load to get through, so we'll fire straight into it. Wins for both Leinster and Munster in the Champions Cup at the weekend. And I think, Birch, an illustration of the best and worst of the Champions Cup at the moment, where on Friday night you had Leinster's win against Leicester, a proper roll-your-sleeves-up, old-school European night. It was fiery and tetchy and the crowd were getting involved. It was error-ridden in the best possible way, rather than being a stop-start, sluggish kind of a game. Really closely fought, Leinster just about getting over the line. And then Munster's win against Gloucester at Páirc Uí Chaoimh had the novelty factor, obviously, of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, but just a dreadful game all round. And particularly the first half, and the kind of day where I know Munster ultimately got the bonus point in the final 10 or 15 minutes with a few tries, but even when it was a 7 or 12 point game, never really looked in doubt. It kind of is that weekend we're getting in European rugby at the moment. I know you can throw Glasgow's brilliant win against Toulouse into the mix as well, but there just seems to be a real disparity between some of those games.
Yeah, I think we had four or five decent games. I thought Toulon Bat was excellent as well. But we had a lot of one-sided affairs, like even Harlequins, who were bang average, you know, had a massive win. I thought the Irish performances, Leinster got into a real fight, and made a lot down to their own inaccuracies, to be fair. I thought Leinster will be scratching their heads wondering how that game wasn't done by halftime and how they were behind at halftime, because they had a lot of position, a lot of opportunities. And in fairness to Leicester, without a lot of their big names and with some upheaval behind the scenes in Leicester, pitched. And that's what you expect from Leicester. Unfortunately, that Leinster-Leicester rivalry, it's effectively dead. I know that was a competitive game, but they haven't beaten since 2008, so they're not genuine contenders anymore. It's sad to see a club like that, I suppose, trying to find its feet again. But credit to the young lads who played. They got stuck into Leinster, and at the moment, Leinster just are a little bit off, and if a team do go after them and are abrasive and scramble well, because Leinster aren't putting teams away, they end up in a fight, and if you get caught with two, I suppose, breakaway tries. The second one wasn't a breakaway, but it was from a penalty Leinster gave away at the scrum, which were under difficulty until they brought on Slimani. And, you know, Leicester mauled them, caught them on the hop a little bit, and a little bit of space in the backfield, which there is the way Leinster defend. And you could argue a lucky bounce, but I think teams are just targeting that space a lot more now. And you go back to Munster's win against Leinster early in the season, and you watch what Munster did the year before against Leinster. They certainly saw that kick space and went after it a lot. And, you know, one game they execute, the other game they don't. I think smart coaches now are seeing that.
On Leinster then, Brett, we'll kind of get in with that game. Two schools of thought about how good a win it was. On one hand, it just kind of adds to the questions of Leinster's general play, the sharpness just being a little bit off compared to where it was a couple of years ago, the maybe inability to convert tries, where I think a couple of years ago you would have seen them running them in for fun and looking a little bit more mortal than they ever did, particularly in pool stage games. On the other hand, they dug out a win in a proper roll-your-sleeves-up dogfight. They learned far more than they probably would have in a pool win across any of the last two or three seasons. Where does it sit between those
real
schools of thought?
Glasses half full or glasses half empty with Leinster at the moment, and just depending on your own mindset as a fan. Look, they dug out the win. Like at half time, I was actually quite worried about it, but they also created loads of chances. So they had that little short side attack where they came back down off that line out. James Lowe just had to put Kelleher away. Would he have scored? Maybe not, but it would have given them a great position to score. They had a great chance in around the 50th minute mark where Josh van der Vlier had a 3-on-1 and just didn't execute. Mm-hmm. So they are creating those opportunities. 12 entries into the 22, which is becoming a bit of a problem for Irish teams of what they do when they get in there. Like, we got to come up with a strategy. We're not the biggest of teams, and we just need to be a bit smarter when we get out, when we get in there. I think if we go back to the Ireland-Australia game in particular, those 22 entries that Hansen scored his hat-trick on, they were excellent. They were really well executed. I don't really see that at the provinces at the moment. And they might need to go back.
And it was the same at Munster on Saturday night as well. Yeah.
So we might have to go back to the drawing board, the coaching staff, and try and work a way around it. You know, we've got the held up laws. We held up, it's a goal line dropout and you lose that field position. But we just need to probably be a bit smarter what we do once we get in there. But on the positive, we are getting in there.
Where just kind of, how do you go about being smarter? What does being smarter entail? Is it throwing a couple of less offloads, maybe holding on to the ball a little bit longer? Is it throwing more offloads?
Well, the one about Munster, they just need to be a bit more patient in what they were doing. They kind of wanted to score really early, and they just needed to go through those phases and wear teams down. Like, they had the opportunities, they had field position, they just couldn't execute on there. Now, the weather in Cork on Saturday night was absolutely horrendous for them to execute, and there's a lot of handling errors. But I would like to see them kind of move into a more dynamic game and try and quicken those rucks up. Like, they are being slowed down. I know it's difficult once you get into the 22, but at the moment, we don't see the old Joe Schmidt deep cleans anymore, but we can still do them. Like, so that level of thinking, you know, the deep clean, pull the pillars off to the side and then go through those spaces, we don't seem to generate that anymore that we had when Joe was in his pomp here.
Are referees becoming a little bit wiser to some of those little things, like closing off the pillars or cleaning a little bit deep?
Yeah, they are. Look, they go to the TMO. They ask the TMO, is it okay for me to clear that try? And they'll spot it if not. But we do still see it happen. South Africa got a great return out of it against Ireland as well.
Yeah, I think if you think back to what Brett's talking about, the Mac Hansen tries or our red zone attack against Australia, we weren't afraid to play away from the ruck. Like, we attacked the fifth or sixth defender, and there was shape on that as well. So it wasn't kamikaze offloading players trying to pull a rabbit out of a hat. It was actually structured attack in the 22 that attacked a little bit wider. I think the problem at the moment, I would say, is across the board our confidence is a little bit off. Maybe Ulster, and I know they lost the weekend, but Ulster are probably the only team who probably feel that they're firing on all cylinders this season. The rest are all, they've all had stumbling blocks. So Munster and Fort Munster obviously was Stormers and Bath, and it wasn't just two losses. It was the nature of those losses being completely physically dominated. maybe the feeling that your bench doesn't have the same impact as others do, and everyone's wearing out. It's a 23 man game. So I think Leinster's results with that core team haven't been too bad, but they did lose to Munster, that core team. They did lose to the All Blacks. They did lose to South Africa in different jerseys, the South Africa and All Blacks game. And I just wonder, like, they're human. They're listening to negativity. They're listening to people talk about is this team over the hill, which is them. You know, the people who potentially are over the hill are the James Lowe's, etc. They're the ones, they know that question's been asked. And even though you might want to prove them wrong, sometimes you can maybe want it too much, and your skill execution just isn't where it needs to be, and that could be a lack of touches, a training, or that can be a lack of actual, just real confidence or flow at the moment. And athletes go through that. Even O'Driscoll had a year there where he just was doubting himself a little bit, you know. And I think there's reasons why those Leinster players will be doubting themselves, because in a Leinster jersey they've had a lot of heartbreak, you know. And I actually think the feel good factor they get out of winning that game, even though it wasn't pretty, will stand them a good stead. Because I look back at the big games they've lost, the Bulls home and away in knockout, the La Rochelle twice, Toulouse, Northampton in recent years. And like, I never, bar Toulouse, who are a phenomenal side, I actually don't feel Leinster didn't have as much talent as the others at all. I actually think Leinster have more talent, or as much anyway. But it was game management, it was selection, it was halftime. It was tactical shifts, it was closing out games or coming from behind. So that game at the weekend, actually, for them having to come from behind and be in a tight position at half time and not panic and find a way would be good for them. Because when it gets to the knockout stages, they're going to be behind at times. You know, they're not by far the best team in the competition, but they still have enough talent, I think, to to do something, but he obviously has to improve a lot of things. And I also think, I thought their attitude was excellent. I thought, like, even the top end players who've had a lot of game time, who were on Lions tours, etc., they looked energetic, desperate to play.
I am really interested to see what this leads to, and do we see a big kind of bump coming off the back of it? Because, as you said, the attitude was brilliant on the night when things weren't going right, and the celebrations after the match. I think maybe a year or two ago, if they had won a game in that nature away from home in a pool stage, I think there would have been a much more subdued kind of atmosphere among the players afterwards, and they really got a kick out of winning that game. And you could probably see, I don't know, was there a little bit of a pressure valve after being released? I'm not going to say it is going to turn their season around, but I'm fascinated to see, you know, maybe in 4 or 5 months' time, do we all look back and say, geez, that night at Welford Road, that could have been the night when everything changed for the season.
But if we follow Leinster's last couple of seasons, they've been firing at this time. Mm. They've been absolutely brilliant. And then by the time they get to the semi-final stage, it kind of fades off a bit. Mm. So maybe, fingers crossed, Leo's hoping, well, hold on, this is our dip now. And then hopefully when we get to the knockout stages after the Six Nations, we can actually kick on into another level. I think one thing that Leo has and Jack has in their top pocket is the standard of the bench they're bringing on. Mm-hmm. So what the team looks like with 20 minutes to go is a huge advantage over teams. Massive. And there's very few teams in Europe can actually have that. And I think this is a modern day thinking on the game where teams are now looking to see, well, what is the last 20-minute team look like? Mm-hmm. Forget about the first 20 minutes. What does the last look like? But when you've got seven internationals on the bench of the weekend, Leicester, I looked at the Leicester bench, they'd one international and they'd four or five lads who were playing in the championship this week or this season for Nottingham. You know, the difference is just massive. To bring on a British Lions players, French internationals, it's just a huge advantage they have.
Yeah, and financially, that's like everybody knows that, but a lot of people don't have the resources to actually go and do that. And even you see a Leicester team, you know, they're losing Nicky Smith to Sale Sharks. They're losing George Martin to Saracens. Only certain clubs are able to keep enough top quality players that they have a bench. And even Toulouse at the weekend in Glasgow, 21-0 up at halftime, cruising. And they sent a strong team to Glasgow, but they still left a few players at home who in normal world would have been on the bench. So there's only, I would say, 4 or 5 clubs who have that depth. And maybe some of those clubs who have the depth, because of salary cap and because of financial pressure, mightn't be able to have the same depth in 2 years' time. But Leinster will have, because it's just the nature of the budget here. Yeah.
As a quick aside, that Toulouse defeat to Glasgow has probably thrown a little spanner into the works for the knockout stages. Yeah. Presuming, obviously, that Toulouse aren't going to be a number one or two seed, it livens things up nicely, because you could be in a situation now where you're a decent pool winner, or you finish second in a pool and you think you've got a nice little path towards home advantage running through to maybe a quarterfinal or a semi-final of the Champions Cup, and all of a sudden you could now be at home, albeit, but at home against a Toulouse.
If you stop the clock now and stop the competition, Leinster at home to Toulouse in the last 16 game, which is just bonkers at this moment in time to think about it. And the organisers are now scratching their heads going, oh no, we can't let this happen.
I don't think Toulouse will get back into the top. I don't think Bordeaux or Leinster or Saints will lose.
No.
Like, Toulouse will qualify, but I don't know if they'll get back. I'll have to check who the 4 team is, but
It will be very interesting to see what the Stormers do, because the Stormers now are sitting at top of our pool.
Yeah.
So they've got a home game, or sorry, an away game against Quinns after Christmas, and then they've got the home game, but they've played their 2 French teams already and they have their 2 wins. There was a rumour that they'll send a weakened side to London. I think they'll look at the pool stages. I think they'll go strong now and try and top the pool.
Yeah, they've rested their box as well. They're able to get rest into them, and they've got squad depth. Stormers at the moment have squad depth.
Yeah, they have plenty, and they're in a good position in the URC on top of it as well. Let's move to Rico Ioane. Second game, first start, and one of the things you mentioned, Brett, when we in the kind of group chat we had in the last couple of days was how do you get more out of Rico Ioane? If you've signed an All Black, an 88 cap All Black, one of the best players of the last 10 years, how do you put him in your team and have him chasing kicks all day?
It's a huge challenge for the attack coach, for Leo. Well, firstly, we've got to boil down into where's his best position. So at the moment, they've played him at 13. Gary's injured. What happens when Gary comes back? You're bringing back in an Irish international. Do you keep Rico in that position? Do you move Gary? How does that fit with Andy Farrell leading into a Six Nations? I think they'll start Ringrose. If you move Owani to the wing, does he take Tommy O'Brien's position, mm-hmm. which again is another national team player? So that's the first problem that they're going to have. You know, he's only in the country 3 weeks. He's only probably had about 6-7 training sessions. They're trying to find ways of getting him on the ball and off the ball. I think he handed up with 8 touches the other night. He chased 3 or 4 kicks. An awful lot of the time he was playing in the front line and they played behind him. And they were trying to feed Tommy O'Brien and get Tommy O'Brien into space. But I think they need to design plays that he's on the ball a bit more than he was the other night. And again, I'd like to think that will come true after a number of training sessions. He's still learning systems. He's still learning the way Leinster do things. And they're still learning about him. What is his capability? But they need to find ways of getting the ball in his hands.
But is he, well, you're talking about the impact of the bench. Is there a strong possibility that the Leinster's bench for a knockout game will have the 3 foreign players? Slimani there for scrum, Plaster, RG there because that's the role he plays now pretty much nearly exclusively. I know he's had some starts, but for the box and for Leinster, they've often used him off the bench.
Well, I think we
and
know.
And Rico as your utility back.
I think we know, depending on who's fit, RG will be on a bench yes. anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering, I know with Rico is it Robbie, Gary, Tommy, James Lowe? What, like, is he that guy who comes on with 30 minutes to go as an X-factor player, as a power player? Obviously, he's going to play lots over Christmas because Gary's injured. But yeah, I'm not sure. And also, is that because of Ireland or is that because of where Leinster see it? Or has Leo now got the... is Leo now saying, oh, I'm putting Leinster first. If I think Rico is the best 13, he plays 13. That's going to be an interesting conversation or interest to see how that pans out.
Particularly after what happened last year where you were keeping Jordy Barrett back on a bench in a European yeah. semi-final. If the same thing was to happen again.
Yeah, but sorry, just on that. Look, I'm not saying Rico should be on the bench, but I think maybe Jordy Barrett was a player who you want to start. He's a different type of player than Rico. I think... He, and speaking to players who play with him last year, like his ability to see space, talk during the game was different. I think one of Rico's super strengths is his athleticism. Like Jordy Barrett is a very good athlete, but he wasn't a super athlete. He was his all-around rugby player that I think was more useful to start maybe than Rico. Now, maybe Leinster can't afford not to have him on the team or starting, but I would agree with Brett. I think it's find a position for him and let him get some reps there. And if you use him in the centre... Yeah, or wherever you use him, get him on the ball.
If you are to try and manufacture ways of getting him on the ball, though, Brett, do Leinster have to change the way they play dramatically to accommodate that?
I don't think so. I think he got on the ball twice again on 2 strike plays off lineouts, and he just took short lines and just kind of crashed it up. I think they need to just reposition him to try and find, like, Leinster are building game plans on what the opposition are doing. So how do they set up? How do they defend? And they've got to try and manipulate the space for him to show what he can do. And like it's a great luxury to have someone of that ability to be able to call upon. But they probably need to be a bit smarter how they use him. You know, I'd like why can't he change roles with Tommy O'Brien and do some of his roles that he, like, Tommy picks some really good lines. There's no reason why he can't use that, use similar plays to get him on the ball.
Are you confident it'll all come together?
Yeah, I'm not, obviously, I agree with Brett. The last 3 or 4 years, they've been outstanding this time of year. They're not outstanding at the moment, but...
Mm-hmm. I mean, even specifically around Ioane and getting him involved more.
Yeah, I think they've no choice but to. I think mm-hmm. they have to maximise his ability. I think Leinster will do whatever it takes to get over the line this year in Europe, and not using him would be naive, I think, yeah.
On the scrums, mixed on Friday. Mm. Obviously, there was a bit of disruption beforehand. Tadhg Furlong having to pull out. It, 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 It was very, very mixed.
Yeah, it was. But Nicky Smith is a very destructive loose head who we've had lots of issues
with.
We've
had issues, yeah.
And yeah, it's another night for Clarkson. I think Clarkson's brilliant around the field. And, you know, he's a work in progress as a scrummager, and he was exposed by Nicky Smith. And that was a weakened Leicester pack, so it is worrying. Now, the Premiership do go after the scrum more than the URC. I think we just need to shift our mindset. We can't feel, we have to basically say that the scrum is a priority for Ireland, Irish provinces, and regardless of the fact that in the URC on a weekly basis, barring playing the South African teams, you'll get away with it. That's not the attitude we need to be, because you will come up against teams in Europe who take you cleaners there. The Irish national team will come up against a couple of teams who can go after them there. So I think I'm really fascinated to see post-November, what is there a shift in the Irish mindset around scrummaging and re-emphasising its importance to the game?
From a coaching point of view, like, how do you actually go about changing that perception? Because when you do have a perception like that, you're probably going into games. I'm not saying a referee is immediately out to get you, but a referee has an idea of things they're looking out for. And if you're showing them those pictures, you're going to get pinged. How easy or difficult is it to go about actually changing those pictures and changing that narrative?
The RFU referees are the real ones that go after it, mm-hmm. because they do a hell of a lot of analysis work on the scrums that they're coming up against. They know the pictures they're looking for. They're looking for. I think Paddy McCarthy paints really good pictures. I know we've spoken about it before. Porter, not so much. So,
but Paddy McCarthy's getting penalised a lot.
Oh, he is. He still gave, what, he give away four against South Africa as well? Like, but Paddy McCarthy's a young kid. He's 20, 21 years of age. He's just learning his craft. Look, I thought the other night he was fantastic around the field. Yeah, he's gonna struggle to mature into the prop we all want him to be. He can't be a world-class loosehead prop in the space of, what, this is his more or less his first year as a professional athlete, or as an international professional athlete. So it's going to take time. And I think we've got the likes of Porter that can do some shift, but then he's got to get minutes as Europe is going on. And he's got to scrummage, not against teams like the Dragons, he's got to scrummage in those top European games. And that's what he got the other night.
Yeah,
and he's getting that game time.
I think, Brett, I think what referees want is, they want an easy life. you know, and if you look at the Irish national scrum, you look at the Leinster scrum, let's stick on that, there's been a hell of a lot of movement, like, over the last 3 or 4 years, because Leinster are more ambitious than they ever were. Ireland, you see them being quite ambitious, but that ambition creates a lot of movement and a lot of turmoil. And as Ireland aren't clearly dominant, I think, they can win some, lose some. And then when they review that, when they review those games, they're watching 6 or 7 scrums involving in Ireland with the referee coaches. And if the message is, look, you know, Ireland were legal there, or Leinster were legal, that starts to drip feed. And I'll give you an example. It's not around the scrum. The Caelan Doris penalty early in the game for creeping up the side. Like, that has been coming. That has been coming. And there's no doubt, and I've spoken to some referees, that is something they've spoken about, that they just need to stop. But whereas what you've seen is referees coaching Caelan in that situation. Caelan go back. And by that stage, the damage is done. So sometimes you can be getting away with things for a while before you actually start to get penalised. And then when you do start getting penalised, it's a shock, whatever. And then you think, oh, the referee was wrong. And then you go through a sustained period where it becomes a big issue. So Ireland just need to make sure that they're very quick to, and Irish teams, be aware of, well, what are we starting to get picked up on now that we weren't? And how do we adapt to that? But I thought that first one against Caelan was really obvious, that was something that the referee hadn't got in there fresh with. It was something in his mind. And it is illegal, you know, and Caelan does it all the time. And you could argue he's done it so often and got away with it so often that it's worth it. But if he gets pinged for it every time now, it could cost Ireland the game, or Leinster game.
My sister's house training a puppy at the moment. It sounds like a very similar process.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to bring in Ulster here, because that's the game of the weekend this weekend, Friday night at the Aviva Stadium. It just looks like it's set up brilliantly. I know Ulster were beaten at the weekend, but I don't think it's a game anyone's going to be reading too much into. They were heavily rotated. They still scored 4 tries again. I think they've scored 4 tries, at least 4 tries in every single match they've played so far this season across both competitions. Looks like Stuart McCluskey is back again. Huge boost back for them, particularly with Ian Henderson and Rob Herring and Mike Lowry all still out. It just feels like this is set up to be a right cracker, and you feel like Ulster are going to go down and have a real pop off them.
Isn't it great that Ulster are now, we're now talking about them again?
And also, we're getting more excited about the URC game after the Champions Cup round rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Look, Richie's done a fantastic job. But like, Richie's only in the job, what, 18 months? He's now got a new attack coach in Mark Sexton. And they're still learning about their players. I was quite concerned of them coming into the season not having the squad depth of the other provinces. But I think he's slowly drip-feeding players in, and he's got a really competitive squad. There's a number of issues coming up and I'll go back to Leinster's. Richie's an old former coach in Leinster. Leo won't want a former coach putting one up over him. Then he's got Connacht as well. He doesn't want Lancaster putting up one over him. And then obviously the noisy neighbours down south, he doesn't want to lose there again. So it's how strong will Leo go on this fixture? But it's a fixture, it's a home fixture, a home crowd that he'll want to win. But Richie will want to put one over Leo as well, and his home province as well.
We'll obviously find out those team selections by tomorrow, Thursday afternoon. The way Leinster have approached these games over the last few years, they've gone away from the A team, B team model, and it generally seems to be a mix of both across this game, the match on the 27th against Munster, and then the following week against Connacht as well. It seems to be a combination of some of the frontline internationals and some of the regular squad players across each of those games rather than going A and B. So ultimately there's a pretty strong team out there week on week.
Yeah, no, there is. And I think, let's talk about Ulster. Interestingly, I heard Saracens are having a look at Richie Murphy, who's off contract in the summer, apparently. So that's interesting. So his progress and his little rebuild with Ulster is starting to make waves in the UK. And obviously you'd hope that Ulster, Rory Best, obviously in there now, that they could just get that coaching staff locked down, because they have done a great job. I also think for the Ulster players, like who have maybe been disappointed not to be more involved with Ireland, because they're not in the European Cup, their interpros become even more important for them in terms of laying down a marker. And obviously it looks like they're going to get, because you've rotated, they'll be pretty strong this weekend in particular. So I think that's a big step up for them. And seeing actually, can they go toe-to-toe with an Irish province, a team like Leinster? And I totally agree with Brett. Like, there's no doubt Leo's going to have to rotate his team and rest people. But those three fixtures, because of where they are on the table as well,
they're all important.
Yeah, they don't have much room to maneuver anywhere. And will they go hardest, strongest against Munster away, and then maybe bank on a little bit of home advantage to try and get over the other two? But get over this weekend. I'm not sure how he's going to play it out. But I think he's going to have to go reasonably strong in all three, because Leinster don't have a huge amount of, as I say, space to play around with.
And it's really interesting to see how that Mark Sexton Ulster attack shapes up against Jack Nienaber's defence, because we would have seen it in the previous years where he was at Connacht, where even though Connacht weren't picking off the wins against Leinster, they were consistently troubling them.
Yeah. And is it going to be ball in hand, which they have been doing, or are they going to go look to turn Leinster and find that kick space? Or will it be a mixture of both? Their attack is humming, but again, it's a lovely opportunity for Leinster to really, I suppose what Leinster's profile is, Leinster's belief or philosophy is, we're going to test our opposition skill set, and they won't be able to execute what they want against us. And you often see a lot of teams not really playing a lot of phase play because they don't want to lose energy in attack. Whereas I think Ulster are one of the few teams at the moment who have still kept the philosophy that they want to build phases. So I know, I think I said last week, one of the stats that they had was the Racing concede more tries than anyone else after five phases, but that suited Ulster. Like, there's no point if you're a team who go hard for three phases trying to change too much because of the opposition. But Ulster's philosophy is play, keep the ball, and again, you would love to see how that plays out against the Leinster defence, who are going to have changes in it as well because of squad rotation.
Neil, I really want to see how Jack Murphy goes. I've been really impressed with him this season. Like, he seems to beginning to fill out. He's had a number, two or three years now of being a professional coming through the academy. he's a really talented young kid, and he's another 10 that will, like, after these Interpros, we could be starting to talk about him being an Ireland A international and maybe being an extended squad. But he is a very, very talented young man, and it's going to be really fascinating to see how he goes, either against, if it's Prendergast or if it's Byrne. I'd just be really interested to see where he's at this moment in time.
Has he almost benefited from the fact that nobody is really talking about him? Like, there's out-have discussions going on almost every single week. We have enough of them on this podcast, and they're on plenty of others as well. Has Murphy kind of nicely gone under the radar and just been able to build away at his game and build away at his game without really having that scrutiny on him?
Yeah, no, he has. But when you look at what he's doing every week, he's
doing a bloody fine job.
His pass selection, his understanding of when to play, when to kick. He's got a good kicking game. He's a confident young lad. We both saw him in school. Himself and Finn Tracy from that Presbury team have become pros. And he's the top dog there now, you know, whereas last year he was kind of in and out. I think Richie, if you look at how Richie, I suppose, blooded him and brought him through, it was in a very controlled way. And I think it's not just because of his son, but if you look at some of the other youngsters, he's been, and like, that's what you expect from someone who's had a huge amount of experience in the academy, under 20s. You know, he does know those young players probably better than any of the other pro coaches. And I think that's going to benefit Ulster, because they obviously could bring in Angus Bell and Augustus, but realistically, that project is about bringing through those diamonds that are in the pathway and trying to bring them all the way to the top.
Yeah, really looking forward to that game on Friday evening. Munster 31-3 winners against Gloucester in a pretty poor game, and really disappointing for the occasion as well, because it was set up to be a fantastic occasion down in Porkycueve. It was 36,000, few short of a sellout, but it still was set up nicely. The place looked great, and just within 10 minutes of kickoff, you just knew this game was already, it was going to be a dud regardless of what the scoreline was.
Yeah, it was just so disappointing. You know, you were just, they built it up so well, and they had their soprano singers, they had drone footage, yeah. And you were actually quite excited about, let's see how this goes. And then it just didn't go anywhere for at least the first 35 minutes. It was quite painful to watch at times. Just so many handling errors. Yes, the weather was pretty horrible for those players.
It wasn't horrendous. I was there now. There was a solid wind. The rain didn't really ironically, the rain actually didn't arrive until the second half. The first half was played in dry conditions, which was incredibly peculiar given how poor a game it was. There was a decent wind, but aside from that, it wasn't. I've seen, like, I remember being at that good, the South Africa game they played down there 3 years ago, the first match they played at Porkycueve. That was brutal weather. It was sideways rain for the entire match. And, you know, it was a cracker of a game. So I don't really think the weather actually had an enormous...
You're not going to allow them away with that.
Honestly, I'm not. And I'm not trying to do that in a harsh way. It just ended up being one of those games. I think the fact that Gloucester had their second team out, the atmosphere from kickoff just ended up being flat, because it didn't feel like the occasion it should have been.
Yeah, but they also had, like, what was there, 9 changes from the changes against Bath. Like... But, you know, as a coach, it's very difficult to incorporate that into your play as well. Look, I actually think the Munster project is really fascinating to watch, and I'm a big fan of what they've done. They've got an old school coach back in to return to their main philosophy of how they want the game to be played, and I just think we need to just probably calm down about it, because it's not going to happen overnight for them. It's going to take a long time. They don't probably have the front row to be as competitive. We go back to those great Munster sides and have a look at the John Hayes's of the world. They don't actually have that anymore. So we've got to allow Clayton McMillan to find a way through this. Will it be successful? I actually think it will be. I think they've got a fine coach there and they are heading in the right direction, but it's not going to be an overnight success for them. So they're gonna have to go through some more pain as they go through. Will they be competitive in Europe? I'd like to think there could be a last eight opportunity. Munster in the last eight of European Cup, we've seen it over the years. Mm-hmm. They're not a million miles away from beating top sides. You know, so I'm hopeful for their project. I think it will go well for them in the long run. I think Macmillan is now just learning about his players. I do like his no-nonsense approach when it came to selection this week. Anyone who didn't perform, they weren't selected.
Yeah, and on that, I actually, after the game, I quite enjoyed, he kind of took the no-bullshit approach when he was speaking to the media after the game. He wasn't trying to dress it up as, we came here to get 5 points, that's brilliant, you know, and sometimes I think coaches can, understandably, try to pick out way too many positives from a scrappy performance. And, you know, he did say, obviously, it was great to get the win. They're back on track in terms of that. But he was stressing still a lot of the frustrations they had. He kind of talked around. Sometimes if you're willing something a little bit too much, that actually becomes the issue, forcing the problem. So there was just no bullshit around kind of talking up a performance that wasn't really... up a 6 out of 10 performance into an 8 out of 10.
And I think that started on the... I think he shocked a few people Friday when in his press conference, because Prendy did press early in the week. So normally coaches, if you're going to get the real truth out of him, you get it straight after the game or potentially on a Monday. And I was over in Bath for his post-match. He was reasonably calm. And then obviously we don't hear from him all week. And then the Friday, he basically calls it out as being embarrassment. You know, most players and coaches have moved on by then, which I think Munster will thrive on that as they get used to it. You know what I mean? And again, he wasn't trying to trick anybody or caught anybody on Saturday night after the game saying it was perfect. He knows that there's way more in them. In actual fact, the results are probably better than their performances. Like all season, they haven't really hit the ground or been dominant. Now, what I liked about some of the wins earlier on was they dug it out and they showed good. The Munster Leinster game was an outstanding performance. But apart from that, there's been lots of, I suppose, things that they want to fix. And I still think they're trying to find their way of playing. I think it's, at the moment, it's not the kind of Mike Prendergast way, which obviously for the last year, it's not forward domination because they don't have that yet. But speaking to him, I sat beside him last Saturday night at a dinner, and he does want to have more weapons, you know, and he's trying to find out the players that he needs. I think there'll be some recruitment there as well, which is needed, but also for them to understand what it takes to win at the highest level, and maybe some tactical flexibility within that. And it's quite early. It's very early in the project, as Brett says. But he's also been through this before. So like the Waikato Chiefs at the end were, you know, one of the best in Super Rugby, but there were some tough times there. Warren Gatland, I think, didn't win a match, and he was part of that coaching staff. So,
and he was only brought in on the interim at the time.
Yeah, he was brought in when Gats went on the Lions tour. Mm. So he knows what it takes to get a bunch of men together and on point. And I've no doubt he'll get there at Munster.
You talked about being tactically flexible, and I think we saw that at the weekend as well, where changed up the back three, took out Thacker Abrahams and Dermot Kilgallen, put Shane Daly back on the wing, and you go in with Mike Haley at fullback, and most interestingly, Ben O'Connor, a fullback, out on the wing. And it definitely worked. They were winning a lot more ball, and if they weren't winning it, they were creating more contests on the ground for players to pick up off scraps. So Ben O'Connor's selection on the wing was very, very interesting, and he was one of the few Munster players I thought he was consistently good across the game. Not just for stuff in the air, but good kicking, just stepping in off his wing, getting involved in the game. It was interesting to see someone a young player we're so associated seeing a fullback slotting in on the wing and looked very comfortable there.
Look, if you want to send players a message, like I know Prendy spoke about the negativity around the aerial game, but for the last 10 years, it's been a big part of the game. It's more important than ever, and there's an obligation on players you pick in the backfield to win a fair percentage of them. And you know, I think they just sent a message. Like it's no different. You know, when Joe Schmidt was coaching Ireland, he was picking Andrew Trimble and Dave Kearney a lot of weeks, and one of their strengths was that ability to win their own ball in the air, and it's much harder now. But yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I thought it sends a message to everybody who plays in that back three that they're going to be judged on their ability to win the aerial contest or the scraps. And yeah, Ben had a good game, and Mike Haley had an excellent game, to be fair to him.
Mm-hmm. I know I said he was very critical of the team in the press conference after the match, but one of the times his eyes lit up was when he was asked about Conor Bartley after the game. Second appearance off the bench for Conor Bartley, joined just over a year ago. on a kind of a development deal when they were in the middle of an injury crisis, kept on this year, played the first game of the season against Scarlets, has been out injured since then, but got his opportunity off the bench at the weekend, comes in only in the last 10 minutes, but wins two big scrum penalties. And it was just great to see a player stepping up from All-Ireland League level and having that impact in a Champions Cup game. And you get the sense that Clayton McMillan really does see something in him, because he picked him at the first opportunity in the first game of the season. And obviously he hasn't picked him since then, but that's been down to injury. The couple of occasions he's had an opportunity to pick this guy, he's gone from.
Yeah, it sends out a good message to the Irish rugby community. That if you do perform at domestic level, you are being watched. Something that Munster, I don't know whether it's Clayton McMillan has decided upon this, they're releasing a lot of players back into the AAL to get game minutes. So he obviously sees the domestic league as being important. It's vital in New Zealand rugby as well. So unless it's something that he's brought in from there. But it's a great story. I love it, because there are players out there who probably feel a bit hard done by. I think some of the provinces are very quick to cut potential, because they look at players at the 16, 17, 18, and they nearly make the decision then of whether they're going to be professional. Whereas I think, especially front row positions, I think that development needs to be a lot longer, and you need to be start looking at these players in around the 25, 26, and then potentially what do they look like at the age of 29, 30. Because he's had very few professional minutes, he could actually last another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Four or 5 years. If he's managed correctly, he gets the right conditioning in place. But he can do a job. Like if I was the Gloucester coach and I'd be going, is this guy under contract or what's going on here? Because he's someone that I would like to take on, you know, to play at that level. He can play at professional level. And maybe the gap between AIL and that next level isn't as big as we originally thought.
And I think one given you could put into it is, if you've been packing down in the front row for Young Munsters for the better part of 10 years, you know how to handle yourself in a scrum.
Yeah, and by all accounts, he played for the Irish clubs against Portugal. It wasn't long after Portugal had done brilliantly the World Cup, and they were worried about a scrum, and he was absolutely fine. So he's had little testers along the way that, I suppose, has reassured everybody he has more. I just think, man, speaking to Gerald Prendergast, like he was pushing him with Johan for years that this kid would come in and do something, but there was no appetite or there was no money or whatever. And it was, I think, Ian Costello kind of made the decision that he would give him a chance. And by all accounts, he's incredibly popular within the squad. Look, I think the likes of Gavin Coombs and those lads, they recognise what a big moment it was for him the other night to play in Europe for Munster. Like it's another level. I think as well, the AIL has never been better. The standard of 1A, 1B has never been better. And you're hearing regularly, and I hear this all the time, from people saying, our player pool is too small. And these are people within the RFU, right? Our player pool is too small. Well, is there, talk about buying London Irish. Yeah, it's another idea, right? I'm not knocking that. But is there a way where we can use 1A and 1B in particular as a way of increasing our pool? Okay, and keep it all under our own cloud here in Ireland. And I Prendy years ago when he was in France was, and he'd come from that system of Glenn Stahl, Young Munster. So he was basically a pro coach in an amateur semi-pro game, and he had this idea of where the union would work with clubs and schools, and effectively it'd be a three-way contract. So a coach would be coaching in Glen Stahl, Young Munster, and he would have a role at Munster, or he would be under guidance from Munster, you know. And so you're talking about maybe not just players, you're talking about another 8 or 10 coaches who you're upskilling. So potentially you're not just developing players because you're developing the coach better, but potentially that coach then may end up being part of a professional setup in Ireland or go abroad and come back having served their time. So the money from the sevens, we were told the sevens isn't a development pathway for 15s, even though there's some players now starting to show that there was value in that. But could the AIL be a development pathway for players? Like I know Bobby Sheen could be going to Connacht. You know, he's a player from Lansdowne. So there is some talent there that I think clubs are looking at. But, you know, Bobby wasn't in the academy. You coached him, did you?
Yeah, I coached him. Clongos.
So he would be someone if he got a professional contract. I know Leinster are giving him a chance. And he's not out of the blue. There's Jack Kelleher and Cork Conn. There's definitely
Jerry Kerr at Leinster got a rod this season as well.
Had a chance. There's definitely players out there. There was Conan Boomer, who obviously used Tyrone York to get a chance to go play for Chicago Hounds. So there is talent there. Just someone sent me a direct message on Twitter last night saying, and he's involved in Ulster rugby, saying that some Ulster club players had been offered contracts, but unfortunately the value wasn't enough to give up
a day job.
A day job that they're already 4 or 5 years. And I understand that completely. But I think, I don't think we can say that the RFU have to be able to go and outbid PwC or whatever. But I think it is great to see if a fella has the potential that gets recognised and they have a choice if they're good enough, you know.
Leinster have used the likes of Bobby, Dylan Donlan from Clontarf,
Ivan Soraka as well.
The try-scoring machine from Clontarf. They've brought them in. They've given them a small bit of game time. I think with a club like Leinster, because they've got so many contracts, they tend to just keep with those contracts. And so the AIL next-level player, they haven't looked into because they haven't needed to. Because if you've got 4 or 5 hookers, why would you need a sixth one? So it's only for those kind of trips to South Africa have they actually dived in there. But it's definitely an area that we need to probably develop a bit more and see, is there ways, like I'm firmly believe in coach development. I think the AAL needs to be used as a coach development tool as well as a player development tool. And the IRFU and the branches need to be more heavily involved than they currently are.
Mm. And on that, Bradley McNamara from Instonians got on with Ulster at the weekend as well. So that's another one. Final point maybe around the club stuff. Like, you have the Ireland clubs team that it's playing every March now. Like, is there an opportunity even to kind of have those regular camps throughout a season and identify a pool of 20 to 30 players in Division 1A or 1B who you're constantly checking in on, you're getting together for little mini camps and, you know, having everyone aware that these guys are potentially available and, you know, trying to see a little bit more, look under the bonnet a little bit more.
It would seem a very obvious thing if one of your weaknesses is player pool, well, like, how can you look at what's in the country? Mm-hmm. And I also think that there's been obviously the cutback in the number of A games because of financial costs. So remember, before COVID, there was teams flying over to Wales to play, etc. There's still the odd A game, but it's not nearly as prevalent. So again, where are our second string or our potential non-contracted players playing? They're playing in the AIL. And again, as Brett said, Munster have always used it as a there's always been a stronger necessity to have the AIL part of the Munster pathway. But I know there's lots of lads like dying for game time in Leinster too, who it's no harm to go play on a weekend, particularly when the quality is, as I said, better than ever.
Yeah, completely better than ever. On Connacht, 52-0 win against Blackline in the Challenge Cup. A fine blowout, Brett, but ultimately, like, it's a game that'll fairly soon be forgotten. Considering you had the Ospreys game, but also coming into like a very, very important game this weekend against Dragons and in this real meaty chunk of the season.
Yeah, again, Lancaster's a bit like Clayton McMillan. He's still learning about his squad. And I think what Saturday gave Lancaster was another opportunity to see what he has. And he's able now to say, well, what do I need in the future? This is, again, another early project in Irish rugby, professional rugby. And, like, I saw Billy Bowen made his debut and he actually did a really, really good job as well. So now he's looking at that. Well, I now have him as well. You know, given those opportunities, the two centres were outstanding. Boyle at number 8, I know the opposition defence wasn't great, but he still had to take those tries. But I just think it gave Lancaster another 80 minutes to see his players. Yeah, his big focus will be that next game this weekend. Again, like, he's developing and he has this unbelievable way of drip feeding young development players into the central squad, and they don't look out of place. And you know, he did this repeatedly in Leinster, but when Billy Bowen comes on, he doesn't look like a player that's just made his debut. Mm-hmm. He looks like a guy who's already played 20 games for them. And it's a great skill Lancaster have. And like for Irish rugby, hopefully he keeps that going and keeps bringing those players through. But he's a bit, he probably has a clearer idea now what he has and how he goes about it.
Brett, why do you think when they come in like that, or when he was in Leinster, that they look so comfortable?
Oh, I think he gives reps in training. Yeah. He definitely gives reps in training. He's a games-based approach coach, so everything is on the field, games, high intensity, lots of running, and they're well conditioned. They're in great condition, and he gives them reps. I know in Leinster he operated three teams on a regular basis and came up with games where they just kept rotating, playing the same way. They get more touches on the ball, and the player becomes really comfortable in the systems.
That's the feedback that would align with the feedback I've had about him. That of the coaches that have been in Ireland, very few can organise a training session. That sounds like such a stupid and simple thing, but an organising a training session where 50 or 52 players can all finish 80 minutes later with nearly the same amount of touches and the same amount of load. So there's not that disparity between the first team getting better and the others stagnating. Everybody gets tested, and it's something that he did very well in Leinster. It looks like he's doing very well in Connacht.
Yeah, and it's something like, it's a point on the coaches getting to know each other and getting to know their team a little bit more. It was something Rod Sy was doing media yesterday, and one of the things he stressed was that the November break has been absolutely crucial for them, where they had an opportunity. I know it ended up being a shortened block because one of their games was postponed, but they had this opportunity. They go in, start the season, have a handful of games, and then you get a 3-4 week break from matches where, look, obviously they were training week on week, but they had an opportunity to say, okay, what worked in these four games? What do we need to reassess? What do we need to do a little bit more of? What do we need to do a little bit less of? And it's something he wouldn't have had that opportunity in a Super Rugby season where it just kind of runs through. Like a Super Rugby season is a sprint compared to the Northern Hemisphere seasons. And I think he said that's given them a massive opportunity to reassess and see what they have. This, though, is a really, really important block for Connacht. And it was something Caelan Blade was saying yesterday, that in the past, they've identified that this has been the period in the last couple of years where the wheels have either come off the wagon, or in when they've had good seasons, it's been the time of the year when they've really, really kicked on. It's that 10-game meaty chunk of the season where by the time you get to the end of the Six Nations, you know what you're looking at. You're either chasing a campaign or you're trying to consolidate.
Yeah, it's probably down to the selection and the squad depth at that moment in time. Like, I don't know what the situation is with Hansen and Aki, or like Hansen's probably out for a while, but
Hansen's probably, you're talking months. Yeah.
And then Aki?
I think he's fit, is he?
I think he's not on an injury report anyway, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was rested maybe this weekend with an eye on keeping him for the Interpros in a couple of weeks.
Look, it's important for Stewart to keep going with this project, and it's important for him to give the opportunity to some of these young kids, but he does need those experienced players to try and help him through this part of the season. It is tricky for them because their squad depth isn't as big as some of the other provinces. But look, they play a really good brand of rugby. It's enjoyable to watch. You would switch on to watch Connacht, you know, and you're kind of hoping that they can get over the line now in these next few games.
And that means a Dragons game on a Saturday night when you've got two, three Interpros coming up in the next 6-7 weeks. That's 4 points at the very least you have to have in the bank.
Yeah, no, it's must win for them because of you know, the setbacks they had, Cardiff after the first game against the Sharks, or against Benetton, and then obviously they blew it in Ospreys. You'd like to see them go and show a bit of consistency and build on 2 good weeks in the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, so that's Dragons at home against Connacht. The late game on Saturday evening, Ospreys against Munster is also at 5:30. And as we said, Leinster against Ulster Friday, 7:45 PM. Live commentary on RT Radio 1 Extra and live blogs as well of all games on rt.ie/sport and the RT News app. Bernard and Brett, thanks a million for coming in and joining us. And we'll speak to you all again soon.